seriously popular.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
In today's episode...
Why Klopp may just be irreplaceable.
Harry Kane is the biggest diver of them all.
And which wild card should Southgate select for England?
I'm Ian Ladyman.
I'm Chris Sutton.
And it's all kicking off.
Welcome to your Monday edition of It's All Kicking Off. Chris is here, a year older than he was the last time I saw him. Chris Sutton, 51, yesterday. happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks very much.
How was it?
Great day. Got some lovely gifts. A cap. Got one of my sons brought me a newspaper, which was nice. A bit of wine.
Your son bought you a newspaper?
Yeah, an EDP, Eastern Daily Press, which was Saturday's newspaper, which I'd bought the previous day myself and read. But he was trying to be kind. He bought a mail on Sunday.
I mean, he brought you the paper, i.e. to...
He went to the garage, yeah, so brought the paper.
That wasn't his birthday present, the paper.
That was part of it. Just, you know, it's nice to be nice. And I got some jumpers, which I'm really angry about because I don't want jumpers. I've got too many jumpers.
Jumpers plural.
And I think I think my wife is, with the greatest respect, my wife, Sam, quite lazy with the... presence, but that's what 29 years of marriage.
That's a bold thing to say about your wife on a podcast. Well, lazy.
It's
goodness
true.
Me.
Actually, I tell you what was interesting when.
If I said that, I wouldn't be going home.
What was interesting was the standoff we had in bed on.
On the Sunday morning
because it was Mother's Day, of course, and. My birthday. And guess who lost?
So you have ruined my line. I was going to say to you, it's typical of your luck that you only bloke in the world to wake up on his birthday and still have to make somebody else breakfast in bed. That's what I was going to say.
And my concession was I did go and make a cup of coffee.
So did you both lie there for like an hour waiting for the other one to make the move until you were starving?
That was it. I was going to get up and hold the door open for her to go down and make me a coffee, but I went down and did the right thing.
Did you? I'd have done the same.
Gutless from me.
You blinked first. Anyway, while you were celebrating your birthday and Mother's Day, and you're probably celebrating the fact you were at home on a Sunday, which is rare for you to be home at all.
Got dragged in this morning, though.
Yeah, you did.
Couldn't celebrate properly.
Bright and early. Everybody else was glued to Liverpool versus Manchester City, I think. I was there. I have to say, I was saying this to you before we came on air. Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola have faced off 22 times in English football over the last 8 years. I've been at most of those games, not all of them. That one yesterday, to borrow one of Jurgen Klopp's favourite words, was absolutely wow.
Where would that rank then? Because there was yourself and Dominic King getting very excited about this particular game. Where would it rank in the history of the games which you have been to?
What, between those teams? Or
just
or
ever.
Generally?
No, it's not.
It wouldn't even be in the top five. But but when you put everything together... The atmosphere, what it meant, Klopp's last game against Guardiola, unless they meet in the FA Cup, the stakes, you know, the stakes that they were fighting over, if that's the right phrase, made it feel special. And then the game just delivered. The game just delivered. And I have to say, and it's a real cliche, but I'm going to say it anyway, before kickoff, a couple of minutes before kickoff, I was sitting in the press box looking around thinking, this place, when it's like this, Anfield, is special and pretty much impossible to match in terms of atmosphere. It was spine-tingling before kickoff yesterday. I have to say that. And people who were at the 2005 Chelsea-Liverpool semi-final in the Champions League that I wasn't at say that was the best ever, but yesterday must have run it close.
You sensed it before kickoff?
Yeah, when they were singing You Never Walk Alone and when the team's coming out.
But they do that. They do. I mean, they've had many, many big games.
But there was something about it yesterday that felt even on an even higher plane. And you know what? Russell, one of the guys who does a lot of the work behind this podcast and does a lot of the production work, etc., just said to me on the way up, he wonders if Klopp has pulled off a bit of a masterstroke by announcing his retirement, departure from Liverpool, knowing that it'll turn every game into a festival, and whether he knew that that might be something that his team might just need to edge City and Arsenal out. I'm not saying it's right, but I hadn't thought of that. It's an interesting theory.
And I get what Russell's saying, but you can also flip that, and that could have also had a negative impact. But, you know, as whether it was a calculated gamble at this moment in time, it's hard to argue with the role that they are on. And as much as anything, the depleted teams, which Jurgen Klopp has had to put out over the last month or two, and they're still in there scrapping on all fronts.
I was at Klopp's press conference at the Liverpool training ground on Friday, ahead of the game. I hadn't been for a while. It's the first Klopp press conference I've been for a while. I have to say, I think I said to you, I can't remember seeing him as relaxed ahead of a big game. I wrote about it. He looks exactly what he is. Like a bloke who's just had the biggest weight taken off his shoulders, either all the pressure of managing for so long at a club of that size, up against Manchester City year and year and year in the Premier League. He looks like he's free of it. He knows he's free of it. He knows it was the right decision, and he just looks like he's enjoying himself. And if somehow that can translate into his players and the way they approach the last 2 months of this season, they will be difficult to stop, I have to say.
It does look like it has translated that way for the players. So it was a fascinating game, Manchester City starting so well, but then Liverpool clawed the way back into it, I think, just before half time. I thought Manchester City were pretty wasteful in the final third. That, you know, their last ball on numerous occasions was un-City like. But then, the second half after the Nathan Aki short back pass, and I don't blame Edison. I think he was a bit in no man's land when Nunes went round him. But then, I mean, it was, I think Pep called it a soon hummy for 20 odd minutes. But that's what Klopp's teams can do to anybody. And Manchester City, there aren't many occasions where Pep's Manchester City team looked like they were ordinary, but that's how they looked yesterday at times.
And this has been the puzzle that Klopp's Liverpool have presented to City over the last 7 or 8 years. And City fans will say, well, we've managed to cope fine, thank you very much. We've won 4, 5, 6 league titles, however many it is.
And that's fair.
Five under Guardiola. So we've done okay, thanks very much. And that's fair, of course. They are the treble holders, they are the world champions. However, in one-on-one matches, Klopp has managed to present Guardiola with that puzzle that he hasn't solved. And yesterday, looking at Guardiola on the touchline, it was, again, like looking at a guy who's seen this movie before. He's seen Liverpool roll over his team, bang, 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 can't, you know, stretch the game, make it chaotic, make it disorganised, make it all the things that Guardiola never wants football to be. Guardiola wants football to be controlled and precise and geometrical and ordered to his order, to his rhythms, and he stands there watching a game that he's not in control of. And that is what Klopp has managed to do to him on these one-off occasions. You're absolutely right. City were the better team in the first half. City were a better team in the first half, could argue been more than one goal ahead had they been a bit more clinical. But then that one incident that you refer to, Ake, short pass, penalty, changes everything. The switch gets flicked at Anfield and the whole thing changes. And what I want to ask you, Chris, is something that I've been thinking about overnight, is that to me, when that happens, that's Klopp, right? That's the embodiment of Klopp on the field running through that team. I don't think a new manager at Liverpool, whoever it is, can replicate that. I don't think he can get anywhere near replicating that. And that makes me think that Klopp's exit is going to be an even bigger challenge for Liverpool than I actually had previously thought.
Should we wait to the end of the season before we discuss this? I think you're right. I think you're absolutely bang on. The only manager who I think could go in and possibly pull it off, because it's not just about being a manager and being a coach, is it? It's having that stature and that clout and that presence which Klopp has and the association with the supporters, and a lot of his management is about feeling. The only other guy I can think of who could do that is Postecoglou. But that's unlikely to happen. For a young coach to go in there after Klopp could be eaten alive.
I agree. Is there any point trying to play that way? Because I just think I've written about this in our print edition in our verdict pullout this morning, and it's that piece is available on Mail Online and all our digital platforms for anyone who's interested to read it. And I've made the point that it's an X factor, and what I mean about an X factor is it's you can't touch it, it's intangible, if that even a word. It's mysterious. You can't pin it down, you can't pigeonhole it, but it's there. It's there. And once that goes, I don't know what they do. Here's an example. You look at the team sheets before kickoff. They've got four of the back five missing. Salah's not playing. They've got a kid at centre half. Then you look at a midfielder like Endu, right? They wanted Casado, couldn't get him. Wanted Lavia, couldn't get him. So they end up getting Endu at the last minute. He's 31. Man of the match yesterday. Well, you could look at Van Dijk and others, but arguably man of the match. And that's Klopp. To me, that is Klopp. And we might be talking about 5% difference, 10% difference, but it turns very good footballers into an elite team, which is what it did yesterday.
Yeah, and you just have to look back through this season, their ability when they go behind to come back into games, the points which they've gained from that. And I think under Klopp, we've probably always felt that they always, or mostly seem to find a way of getting back into games. You know, he came in, didn't he, and had this heavy metal reputation, brand of football, blood and thunder, and that's, I think he's tweaked things over the years. But they have this is sort of embedded in their, you don't like this word, or DNA, but their ability to scrap and fight and find a way. And you're right about the team selection. You know, before the game, the truth is you think, well, Liverpool need all their big hitters out to really stand a chance against Manchester City. And they're depleted. You know, Gomez starting at left back. Centre half pairing this season, Kwanzaa coming in, who looks like a mighty fine player to me, but chucked in against Haaland and coping brilliantly. Kelleher,
unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because I think there are those out there who have suggested Alisson was one, possibly player of the season, one of the best players in the Premier League. I'm not going to argue with that, but for one so young, really mature, no Mo Salah. But yet they have this sort of belief that they can go toe-to-toe with absolutely anyone.
Now, you're very fond of telling me that you're 6'2", 6'3", whatever.
6'3.5".
6'3.5". You must have played for managers or a manager who made you feel 10 feet tall, because that's what we're talking about here. And so do you understand how that feels, how you can be taken to a new level just by the person that you're working for?
It's taken Klopp was eight years to build this team, and it's coming to the end, of course, for him. But yeah, I mean, look, I think everybody loves Klopp, don't they? Everybody associated with Liverpool, the staff at the club seem to love him, the players love him, the supporters love him, and they're all pulling in one direction. I sort of would have had the same feeling when I was at Celtic with Martin O'Neill. You feel like you're really onto something. But you know, going back to my first season at Blackburn under Kenny Dalglish, you have a feeling that something special.
And do you want to please those managers? Yeah. Do you want to please them?
Yeah, I mean, it's literally as basic as, you do anything for them.
Yeah.
You feel like you'd run through a wall. Where Liverpool got their energy from in the second half, and you mentioned that Ake moment, but Liverpool, suddenly they pounced, and they were absolutely relentless. A lot of teams, when they play Manchester City, you go a goal behind, they probably fear the worst. You never sense with Liverpool and Klopp's teams that they flinch or blink. They just have that inherent belief that they can get back into games.
I would before we move on to talk about the penalty that wasn't given, I would venture that if the first half had gone the way it had gone yesterday, and then City come out and suffer that immediate blow of conceding a goal that they don't expect, it's pretty much against any other opposition, certainly in the Premier League, and pretty much across Europe, I'd have backed City to take a deep breath, dust themselves down, come again and win the game. At Anfield, they don't, because they're not allowed to. Now, last minute or seventh, eighth minute of added time, Doku on McAllister, chest high, studs up, penalty or no penalty? Obviously penalty not given. Penalty or no penalty?
I thought it was no penalty. And I get people who were arguing it was a penalty and for the reasons which they argue it, but I thought Doku won the ball, and where's his foot supposed to go? And it's as simple as that. I get fed up with this. Was it dangerous? Or it was dangerous, his action. But he's trying to win, he's trying to win the ball. The ball's there to be won. He's won it. And, it was a collision. It was a coming together. And I think within the game, players understand that action and understand the procedure of that action. So accept it, but I do. I also get that in the modern day, in the modern game, that how it is viewed.
The problem is, or the issue here, is that you and I, of a similar age, you a little bit younger,
fitter.
You're catching me up.
Taller, stronger.
Lost my train of thought. You and I view these things through the prism of the 1980s, essentially. And we do.
We're not dinosaurs.
We're not dinosaurs, but we have, and I think a lot of people are the same, we have an instinctive reaction to what we think is a foul and what we think is a penalty, instinctively, from what we think we know and understand, you from playing the game, me from watching it for a long time. And from our standpoint, that's not a penalty. However, Law 12 of the rules of the game, which I did check this morning.
You brought a rule book in?
You said to me a couple of weeks ago you could see me as a fixture secretary. Maybe I could do the rules secretary job. I could probably do it better than IFAB, actually, to be honest. Maybe I should be a rules secretary. Anyway, Law 12, laws of the game. A direct free kick is awarded if a player commits any of the following offences in a manner considered by the referee to be careless, reckless, or using excessive force. Nothing to do with taking the ball. And I'm afraid if you wanted to go to the letter of that law, was Doku careless? Yes. Was he reckless? Yes. Not, he didn't use excessive force, but he ticks two of those boxes. So it's probably a penalty.
That's looser.
But I'm not offended by the fact it wasn't a penalty. That's because my instinct says no. But the laws do say yes. The laws say yes. Now, we're going to put that out onto a poll on Spotify. For those of you listening on Spotify, we do a poll every week, so you can vote. If you go beneath the show notes when you finish listening, this poll will be there. Very, very simply, was it a penalty? Yes or no? Last week's poll was about the two stonking goals in the Manchester derby. We asked whether Marcus Rashford or Phil Foden had produced the most memorable bit of magic in that game. And the upshot of that one was 64% of you thought that Rashford's was the most memorable, and Phil Foden came in with 35. I never understand these Spotify polls, why they don't add up to 100. 64 plus 35 is 99. What were the other 1% saying?
Yeah, but they'd say they're both it's the same.
Well, there wasn't an option for don't know or same, so someone somewhere is getting that wrong. Anyway, neither of the teams that I was watching yesterday and getting so excited about are top of the Premier League. Top of the Premier League are Arsenal, courtesy of goal difference. They've scored more goals, have got a better goal difference. They are top of the Premier League. Our producer Henry, Arsenal fan, thrilled to bits about that. Came in with a smile on his face this morning. Not sure he'll still be smiling come the season's end. Arsenal have got to...
Let him have his moment.
Well, he's been having his moments. Arsenal have got to go to Manchester City next time out for a start. But one thing I did think about this morning was... And again, I was watching Match of the Day on the train coming down from Manchester this morning, and watching the highlights of the Tottenham Villa game and the way that Tottenham played. It does feel like a bit of a golden era for the Premier League at the moment. This is going to be a three-horse title race. It looks like it would go right to the wire. The standard of football is incredible. There's no let-up from either team. None of them seem to want to lose anymore. Am I getting carried away? Or should I be thinking back to the great Arsenal-Man United rivalry?
When was the last time it was a three-horse race?
Don't put me on the spot.
Would we say the Leicester, when Leicester won it?
Leicester and Tottenham. Like I say, don't put me on the spot because I don't have an answer. It was only 2016. I should remember. Leicester, Tottenham. Yeah, I think Arsenal were involved for a while. But this is neck and neck. Are we in a peak moment in Premier League history at the moment? It feels like we are.
I think so. And then, you know, you chuck other teams into the mix this season as well. Villa, you know, Tottenham. I think that they have been excellent. But in terms of a title race and it being so close. And, I mean, you know, you asked me that ludicrous... You asked me to do that ludicrous points thing, didn't you? Points tally.
You made it ludicrous.
You know, a supercomputer.
It was really simple.
And I went into great depth, and you said that shot me down.
It was really simple.
Shot me down in flames. Nobody has you know, we sit here and, you know, we could say a different team every time we're on the podcast, who could win the league and make a case for... Manchester City, you can make a case for Liverpool, you can certainly make a case for Arsenal. And what I like about Arsenal and the way they did it at the weekend is recently they've blown everybody away. Everybody thought they'd rock up against Brentford, me included, and wipe the floor with them. They didn't. They got very fortunate with one particular decision, because Havertz should have been sent off, second yellow for diving. He wasn't, and then he ends up popping up with a really important win. Arsenal weren't at the best, but they found a way, and that is so big when you're in a title running.
Got away with the Ramsdale thing, didn't he? Got away with that.
He did.
He got away with that.
Yeah, he did.
You know what made me laugh about that? I think people in football or football media get a bad... get a bad reputation for being kind of, you know, vultures and all the rest of it, bloodthirsty. Everyone's pretty nice, really. I was listening to the commentary of the back end of the Arsenal-Brentford game. Just got in from a particularly tedious children's party at the Wacky Warehouse in near Stockport.
Tedious children's party because obviously weren't involved.
There's no other type of children's party apart from a tedious one. Anyway, just got back to see the final half an hour of that. And Ramsdale made two saves, right? He made a save from a header, tipped it over. And the commentators are like, oh, they'll make him feel better. He saved his team there. It was the most straightforward save you've ever seen. But people were desperate to kind of shift this narrative away from Ramsdale horror story to, oh, Ramsdale atones. Just saying, people are nice. I'm sitting there.
You're sharpening your pencil, you
kind of was, really. I was texting you, saying, told you, Ramsdale's backfired. Anyway, moving on from that, they did win the game. They did it ugly, like you say. You've already called it. Havertz dive, sending off. Yeah. Well, second yellow.
Second yellow. And our producer Henry tried to argue this morning. He first of all said, "I'm not biased," which makes him completely biased. That that his first booking wasn't a yellow card, but that's
the elbow.
That's yeah. So that's irrelevant. I'm not going to argue either way with that. But he, you know, that was a clear dive, and I noticed Graham Souness did another column last week about the blue cards.
Mm.
Situation like that, Arsenal really got away with one, and maybe when things like that happen, you think, but you know, is it going to be Arsenal's title? Thomas Frank was deeply unhappy about it because they're still in a relegation scrap, and I totally agree with him. Havertz should have gone.
But the problem with that, Chris, is that so the referee, I think, as you saw from the replays, was pretty unsighted. The linesman's got a better view. I feel like I'm always sticking up for referees, but I'm going to do it again. So I think it's quite possible to see that it wasn't a foul, but there is a no man's land between a foul and a dive. Just it's not a foul doesn't mean it's a dive. And if you're the linesman on that side and you're going to give it as a dive, or you're going to indicate a dive, or if you're the referee, because you know that the second yellow is a red, you've got to be certain it's a dive.
Why can VAR because they're not allowed not get involved? But that is ridiculous. Yep, so
correct.
Cheating.
Yeah.
So cheating, diving is cheating.
Yeah.
So a player cheats and VAR cannot get involved in it. That's ridiculous.
I agree with that. I agree. But the referees and the assistants can only work with the parameters that they have been set for them, and they are the parameters. I kind of get it. In the game, dive, I'm not saying that Havertz is a regular diver. I don't really know if he is or not. But there are players out there who do it a lot. Within the game, when you played, how are those players regarded by other players? When you were playing, people who did it all the time, how were they regarded?
It's quite basic, really. And
well, I don't know.
I
don't know.
I actually think that the British game has caught up with
you're not going to say foreigners.
I'm not going with European
continental game.
But I'm being truthful. So we lost the 2003 UEFA Cup final to Porto.
Mourinho's Porto,
mm. Good team, bunch of divers. And I mean, we used to, you know, play teams in European competition and, you know, be on the end of some, you know, pretty shocking decisions because of diving. So essentially, the British game has caught up. I'm not saying it's right, but you know, it is as basic as when it happens against you, you're furious and angry, and you know, nearly get scrapping with the opposition, and you know, they're a bunch of cheats. When it happens, you know, with one of your players decides to dive, then that's a good thing if you're
it's
rewarded.
It's a bit of a white van man opinion just to say that, oh, we just copied it from the continent. But do you think that is actually right? Do you think that's what British players did? Do you think they did?
Yes.
See it. If you can't beat him, join him.
I take great offence to the white van man.
You don't look offended. You don't look offended.
No, honestly. But I can tell you from experience of European football, that, you know, it's something we talked about. I'm not, it was what it was. And it's something now, it's prevalent in the Premier League. We call out divers every single
week. Yeah.
You know, we see it not just in the Premier League, across all levels. But you can't tell me, you know, going back, and you'll have to take yourself back. I know you can't remember what happened in 2016. Neither can I,
by the way. I can't remember what happened yesterday.
Two weeks ago. But I'm telling you that the British game has caught up with the continent as far as diving is concerned.
You're a centre forward. That means that at some point you must have dived. I'm not saying you're a diver. You weren't, to my memory, but you must have dived.
There has to be a certain amount of contact.
So when you've done it, like, to use that awful phrase, exaggerated contact, and you know you've done it, did you used to kind of go home and kind of flog yourself afterwards with shame, or jump into the shower and give yourself a good scrubbing to get rid of the dirt, the shame of it, the shame of it? Or did you just go home and think, you know what, I got away with one there. That's fair enough, we won the match.
I don't think any player sort of overthinks
dirty secret
like that. Yeah, most players, if they can get away with it,
I'm asking about you.
So
in the car on the way home,
I don't think I was a diver.
In the car on the way home after you'd done it, what was going through your mind?
I can't remember diving.
Never once.
I don't think there's any
exaggerated
evidence
contact.
Has to be sufficient. No, that's a different thing. If there's sufficient,
still cheating.
Sufficient
bollocks.
Contact. Oh, come on.
Still cheating.
There has to be sufficient. If you can find some evidence of me diving, provide it, and then we'll discuss.
Henry, I know you're listening. Well, I hope you're listening. Should be. You're the producer. Get on it.
There are. I tell you where, because I get a lot of this about. You know, because I call out divers on a particular show I'm on, football phone-in, and Manchester United fans have resorted to bringing up an incident, I think 1993-94, where I'm clearly brought down for a penalty. Gary Pallister trips me. I outpace him. I was just a really quick runner back then.
Surged into the box.
And he clips me and I go down. You can see from my reaction that it's a penalty.
Playing for Blackburn.
But you can't... No, for Norwich City.
Oh, sorry.
We ended up drawing the game 2-2. Ruel Fox scored the penalty. But they sort of often put that clip up to suggest that I was a diver. But,
Henry,
have a look yourself.
Henry is getting his excuses in early. I also suspect that Chris is trying to divert our attention towards one particular incident, maybe knowing that there's a couple of others lurking out there.
That was one of those where you'd describe it, or commentators or good journalists would describe it as I was running so quickly.
You tripped over your own laces.
The pace of my run, you know, you get clipped, you go down.
Right, enough of that. Let's play some five-a-side. Now, before we do five-a-side, I'm going to have to clarify something. A friend of mine, a very, very good friend of mine, who listens to this podcast every single edition and has done since the first one that we did back in August, has been in touch to tell me that we've been getting it wrong. You know, we make this point every week about ascending order.
But that's not what...
Ascending order.
Me.
Right? We're wrong. It's not ascending order. We think that because it goes from kind of 5-4-3-2-1 to, i.e., from kind of, you get better as you go along. That's ascending order. It's not ascending order. It's descending order because you go from 5-1 and that's down. And he's checked it out and he's looked it up. 5-4-3-2-1 is descending order.
But,
okay?
But don't say we. What's your friend's name?
Nigel.
Just apologise to Nigel.
I've thanked him.
Yeah, but you can apologise.
He's a pedant.
As well.
He's a pedant, and I've told him that. But I've thanked him for his pedantry, because we need to know. So descending order. We're going to do my top five divers that I have
top
seen.
Top five divers ever. The most dives.
And you're not in the list. No, just the most memorable. You're not in the list. This is my top five in descending order. Number five, Jürgen Klinsmann. Can't not have a man in the list who made a celebration out of the fact he was a diver when he got to Tottenham. We love Jürgen, lovely man, still playing five-a-side football with his mates in California every Monday. And I wonder if he's still flopping to the ground there, because he always used to do it. And he was one of the ones, to be fair, who maybe people like yourself were copying back in the day. Number four, Cristiano Ronaldo. When he came to Old Trafford, to Manchester United for the first time, he was extraordinary, to the point where some of his senior teammates at United did have to tell him to cut it out, and Sir Alex Ferguson also did, because some of his theatrics were beyond the pale. As were those of Luis Suarez when he played at Liverpool. I don't think anyone ever had the courage to have a word with him, because he never stopped. And I'm going to drag one from the world of football, simply because I was there. The great Brazilian Rivaldo, I once watched play. The first World Cup I ever covered, 2002 in Japan and South Korea. I was watching Brazil play a game against Turkey on Jeju Island, I think. And Rivaldo was hit in the knees by a ball and went down clutching his face. And even you know, he played in played for Barcelona, played in Brazil, played in environments where a bit of theatrics was not exactly uncommon, but even for that one, he was called out. So we've had the great Rivaldo at number two, and for me, number one, Ashley Young. Ashley Young, still going strong at Everton, not diving, I don't think, anymore, but there was a time during his spells at Aston Villa and Manchester United where Ashley Young was absolutely ridiculous. It was almost like, felt like it was every week. Absolutely. And that was before VAR and all the rest of it. So Ashley Young, you're not going to want to wear the medal, mate, but you're number one, my list of divers.
I'm just going to mention two quick ones who you've left out. Scandalous how you've left them out. Bruno Fernandes. What, one of
too obvious.
One of the worst. What do you mean, too obvious?
Too obvious. I'm always criticising Bruno.
Okay, but no, but not for his playing ability. And the winner by a country mile, but you can't call him out because he's England captain, Harry Kane.
Not Lord Harry of Kane.
He's the worst diver. He is a prolific diver and gets away with it. Week in, week out. All the time. Harry Kane is a serial diver.
The worst you've ever seen?
The worst I've ever seen.
No, that can't
I'm telling
be true.
You.
That cannot be true.
Brilliant okay. player, wonderful goal scorer, you know, got everything. But he's a diver.
Well, there you go. There's my top five divers of all time. Chris has pitched in with a couple, including the England captain. So
I should say Todd Cantwell as well, but I'm not going down that petty route.
So that wouldn't be like you. So let's let us know how you feel on this one. Anyway, you can do it in a few ways. You can go to our social accounts on X, Instagram, TikTok, almost a million followers on TikTok now, Mail Sport.
TikTok.
So go to TikTok, it'd be a good place to leave your comment. Any of those socials, or equally, go to Spotify, leave your comments in the show notes, or Apple Podcasts in the comment section. Give us your top five. Let us know what you think of mine. And while you're at it, if you are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, please remember to hit that subscribe button. It's really, really important. We've had a few comments, actually, since the last show. This is from Spotify. John Black from California, USA. A great first listen for me. I'll be listening going forward. Thanks, John.
You didn't have to let us know where California was.
Well, your geography ain't, it's not your strong point. Is it? It's not your strong point.
I'm not
point.
Saying it is, but I know where California is.
And last week we had a little bit of fun, we thought we did, at Bohemian Green's expense, because he was having a go at us for never mentioning Scottish football. So I gave him a couple of examples of how we had, and he's obviously been listening. I stand corrected, says Bohemian Green. Well done for recalling all your previous mentions of Scottish football on the podcast, which consists of an attack on the English coach Michael Beale and also the Englishman Todd Cantwell being a tosser, agreed on both counts. I think he's been slightly sarcastic there, although I do suspect that Bohemian Green may just be a Celtic supporter.
Hold that thought. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Right, Chris, go from one of your favourite teams, Celtic, to another one of your favourite teams, which is Tottenham. They were involved in their own pretty thrilling game, if it can be a thrilling game and you win 4-0, at Villa Park yesterday. Statement performance by Ange Postecoglou's side.
Are we surprised, though?
Well, yeah.
Are we? I thought that was one of those games where, quite frankly, Aston Villa could have won 3-0, Tottenham, you know, could have won 3-0. They're both really brave in the way that they play. Ange Postecoglou last week was talking about not enough games for his Tottenham team, which is unheard of from a Premier League manager under normal circumstances. It's about finishing the season strongly. I think they've had a brilliant season, and I suppose, you look at Arsenal's success and, Spurs are a little bit in their shadow. But from a Spurs perspective, I think you're delighted about what you've seen this season, the way that the team are playing. Van de Ven got injured again, which is has been a blow. And they've been unfortunate with injuries, but breathtaking watch week in and week out, Tottenham.
You've said to me for a while that you thought the lack of European football when we got to this stage of the season would be a huge bonus for Spurs. Yeah. That is how it looked yesterday. Villa had been in Amsterdam on Thursday, drawing 0-0 with Ajax. And they looked dead on their feet yesterday, I have to say. They weren't helped by a change of formation by Unai Emery. He went from a back four to a back five. That might have been a rare misstep from the Villa manager. But more importantly, Spurs just looked like they had more energy. And when Spurs have got energy, you're in trouble.
But I think Spurs are, every time you talk about Spurs, you talk about their, the high line, don't you? You enjoy that, and a little grin every time you talk about Postecoglou's team, that high line. But they get after teams. They can do that to anybody. Tottenham can, and Villa caught them on a particularly bad day. They weren't helped with the ridiculous sending off. Ridiculous sending off from John McGinn. I thought it was a red card. That was cynically no attempt to play the ball and wiped a doggy out. I think that's a red card offence. I don't understand why people are whinging about that. But watching the game, Villa did have opportunities, a little bit wasteful in the final third. Tottenham are ruthless.
I thought that was a bold move by McGinn to try and complain about that red card, that protesting his innocence. That was extraordinary. That was like the type of thing you see at the end of a Sunday league game when one team's getting beat 9-0, they're fed up, the hangover's kicked in, they just want to get to the pub to start topping up from the night before, and they think, I'm having this, and kicks the opposition's best player up in the air. It's exactly what it looked like.
That was sort of accepted in the 80s and the 90s, that sort of challenge. I'm angry, I'm going to show I care. But no attempt to play the ball. They're not going to appeal that. That was just a guy who saw the red mist, lost his head, and ended up seeing red.
You know what I was disappointed about? That nobody said afterwards, oh, but he's not that type of player. He's not that type of player. Oh, he's not got that. He's not got a nasty bone in his body. He's not that type of player.
Well, he's a nice guy.
He's not that type of player.
He's not that type of player.
Well, he was for that. Well, he was.
It was quite interesting seeing him loiter. He loitered, didn't he, around just hoping, praying that it was going to get overturned.
He actually loitered for so long. I wondered for a moment whether he actually had been sent off. He had been there for so long. Anyway, there's some standout performances in that game. I think James Maddison was probably one of them. Ollie Watkins, who I'd said on last Thursday's preview podcast would be licking his chops, looking forward to playing the Postecoglou high line. Yeah. Didn't quite go so well for him. However, I would imagine both of those players would be in Gareth Southgate's England squad, which is due to be announced on Thursday for forthcoming friendlies against Brazil and Belgium. Now, I just want to ask you, there's some choices for Southgate. Well, there's always choices to make, but there's some pretty interesting choices to make. I'm going to ask you for a wild card selection for that England squad.
A wild card selection, which I think will happen?
No, that you think, that you would like to happen.
Don't know whether I should say this, but there's a guy who I think deserves a chance, and it's a bit of a grey area, this, the goalkeeping selection. Jack Butland at Rangers has been very, very good this season. I think Gareth has sent people up to watch him, and you could say, well, he won't have a lot to do, but it's actually not easy keeping goal at Rangers or at Celtic. You have to be super concentrated in big moments. He's been brilliant.
I didn't know Gareth had been up to watch him.
I know that he sent people up to watch him. But that's an area where you look at Nick Pope, for example, out injured. I saw Sam Johnston playing at the weekend, but he's not been a regular.
No.
This season.
Ramsdale.
You've got Ramsdale, who's not been playing regularly. So you've got Pickford, and then there's a real debate, isn't there? He'll take three, of course. So there's going to be three, but that wouldn't surprise me.
After the 2018 World Cup in Russia, and everybody was getting really excited about Jordan Pickford, I wrote what I thought was a slightly contrary column suggesting that Pickford was too emotional to be an international goalkeeper and that Jack Butland would be England's goalkeeper by the next Euros. Well, it turns out that I might just have been one Euros premature. Martin Samuel, my former colleague, now works in the Times, reminds me of this every time, pretty much every time I see him. So I have been smiling when I've been seeing a few pieces about Butland for England. But that's a good shout. That's a good shout, because those are the goalkeepers that you mentioned haven't been playing. Mine is not so much a wild card because it's a complex situation.
What was the name of the game?
Sorry, mate.
What was the name of this game? What was the question?
Wild card. Who's be a wild card?
Yeah. And now, so you've asked me. And now you've said mine isn't so much of a wild card, so it's not quite the same. But you carry on. It's
complicated.
Your show.
It's complicated. So I said last week on last Thursday's podcast that I think Kyle Walker is my player of the season.
Did you see him? Did you see his crossing yesterday?
I'm standing by it, Chris. However, I have to say, at the moment, if not the best right back in the country on current form, or one of, is Ben White. Ben White is playing absolutely out of his skin. He can play right back, obviously. Can play centre half, right? But he has this very strange situation with England, which was a hangover from the last World Cup.
It's more than a hangover.
Yeah, he left the squad early. There was an issue, we believe, with Steve Holland, Gareth Southgate's assistant. And there's not been a rapprochement since then. Ben hasn't appeared again. There was a suggestion that wasn't particularly enjoying life away in camp. Not a great tourist, as Jimmy, to use a phrase a great late Jimmy Armfield used to use about players spending time away during international tournaments.
It was difficult for players and journalists. But, I had to get up and look at you.
But on form, Ben White, with the ball, great cross for the winning goal at the weekend. On form, with the ball, without the ball, if you were Gareth, you might pick up the phone. Or do you think it's a dead? I think it's a dead issue.
Does Gareth still hold that grudge I always think that players deserve. I think players deserve a second chance.
We're not going to go there.
No, but I certainly do in this respect. Yeah. If there's a falling out with a member of the coaching team, Steve Holland, as what everybody thinks happened, then surely they can sit down, chat about it. It's you want to tell. I've always felt this, and I'm not saying Gareth has got a lot wrong, but you want to take in-form players to big tournaments, and Gareth has been a stickler in the past for not doing that and being really loyal. But I think Ben White is a good shout.
Right, before we finish, let's do some moments of the weekend, and you can go first.
I don't want to go down the birthday route again. So a moment of the weekend. This is, I don't know whether this is cruel or not, but I commentated on a game at the weekend with Ian Dennis, who's a brilliant commentator. Crystal Palace against Luton. Before the game, had gone in, had a bit of lunch together, and as we were coming out to go up to the commentary box, the Luton team were coming off the bus, and Ian Dennis had clocked Andros Townsend, who he would have known from
probably working with him
at England and what have you over the years, and Andros was wandering down to go into the dressing room, and Ian shouted, Andros, how are you? And and Andros just blanked him, just totally blanked him, custard pie, and I saw the lot.
I think Andros might have been more of a TalkSport summariser in his time doing the media. So maybe there's a bit of that going on.
Well, he's on Five Live now, but I did. I thoroughly. He was mortified.
Look, maybe Townsend thought that Denner was talking to another Andros. Standing behind him, maybe. Denner would have taken that okay.
He was absolutely was he? Gutted.
Brilliant. I'm the opposite, by the way. So when I see footballers, tend to be former footballers, who I think might remember me from interview, I always just presume that they won't. So I think I end up kind of blanking footballers for fear of being kind of... Did it yesterday. I walked into the press room at Anfield yesterday, and Sean Wright-Phillips, I think I must have interviewed about three times when he played for Manchester City, was staring right at me, and I thought, he won't remember who I am. So I just kind of walked past him and thought, I think that was actually pretty rude, Ian. I think you just blanked Sean Wright-Phillips there.
Wow. Inferiority complex.
Well, the only footballer in the game smaller than I am. You know what I mean? But no, I like that. Hopefully Denner will get over that pretty soon. Now, that game that you were at, so I think ties in with one of my many moments of the weekend. Correct me if I'm wrong, that game, Crystal Palace-Luton, looked like a terrific ending to that game. That was refereed...
Love you, Crystal Palace.
That was refereed by Sonny Singh Gill, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The first South Asian referee to work in the Premier League, who was caught signing autographs at half time. Now,
what's wrong with that?
Dean, former Premier League referee, not exactly a retiring shine, retiring flower himself, has described that as bang out of order. Real old school tabloid phrase, bang out of order. I think it's all right. I think it's okay.
I don't understand if I didn't know that. I don't understand, and I knew this actually going into the second half because, you know, we were told the same thing. But if a kid asks you for your autograph, it's a bit mean for him not to sign it, then, isn't it? You know, good on him.
I think there are two things at play here. I think Mike Dean thinks that what you do by doing that is you leave yourself open to, you know, being accused of bias. If you then give a slightly questionable decision to the home team in the second half.
Because you signed a 9-year-old's autograph.
But what I actually think about it is, you know, and I think this is fair enough to say, that he is the first South Asian referee in the Premier League. He is, therefore, immediately someone who people are going to look up to. He is a role model for lots of reasons. And I think if he'd have said no to the kid, would have been a pretty bad look. So,
a million percent.
I think I'm okay for it. I think I'm okay with it. I'm going to also just flag up two things from the West Ham Burnley game. The first one is David Moyes channeling a bit of Jurgen Klopp in his post-match interviews, where he described the decision to rule out a Danny Ings goal for offside as wow, bit of the young got wow, but then admitted that he hadn't seen the VAR lines. So it's like, well, how can you be so categoric? But the other one was when West Ham scored, I think, the first goal, the Burnley defender, Dara O'Shea, did that thing that like defenders sometimes do, where they go in the net and get the ball, but and won't give it back to the opposition. and we've seen that before, a bit of kind of tugging and tug of war in the back of the net. I've never seen a footballer hold onto a ball as tightly as it was like he was holding a newborn baby. See, it's like, what's the point? I mean, you've got to restart the game at some point, right? And if you want to delay the restart, just tie your lace or something.
Yeah.
Holding on to the ball is in the back of the net just makes you look like a 12-year-old. Does it not?
I take your point. Maybe you should ask him. You should go and interview him.
Did you ever do one of those things that strikers did when they scored a goal and then grabbed it out the back of the net and ran back to the centre circle with it under your arm? The worst type of goal celebration. Pathetic.
No, but that's okay if you're getting hammered.
But it won't work.
What do you mean? If you're losing in a game, you score a goal and you want to get the ball back as quickly as possible to try and score another.
But the opposition aren't going to think, they've put the ball back down really quickly. We better get started. Of course they're not.
It's a better option than leaving it in the net and letting them take 3 minutes to get the ball back, isn't it? Dear me.
Silly. Go and shake hands, have a cuddle, celebrate, whatever. Right, that's it. Thank you very much. Remember, go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts to vote in our poll. Leave some comments. Please remember to subscribe. Let us know what you think of our or my top five divers. But above everything else, make sure you're back on Thursday for the next edition of this show. I'm Ian Laidman. The bloke to my left with an extra candle on his cake is Chris Sutton. And this has been It's All Kicking Off.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.